Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is November 13th, 2015. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher, Bruce Rawls. On today's show, we're going to see where the mood takes us. And since it's November, the month we celebrate Thanksgiving, we will be touching upon the idea of gratitude. Now, it's also Friday the 13th, which could lead to any number of interesting conversations, which is why I think I'm going to say we're just going to go where, you know, where the mood takes us. And while you're listening, please join us in the 12radio.com private group on Facebook. And if you've never been there before, one of the easiest ways to get to us and to find us on Facebook is actually to go to our webpage, to 12radio.com. And when you go to that page, on the left side, you're going to see a link that says chat. And when you click that, you'll automatically be redirected to our private group on Facebook, and you can just ask to join. And that guy at the door ready to let you in is our producer, Scott Weaver. So thanks for being here today, Scott, and thanks for everybody who's listening and who's going to join us in the chat room. I will see you over there. So let's get our conversation started. How you doing, Bruce? Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, CA. Thanks for having me on again. Always a joy.
Well, oh, thank you. And as usual, of course, we've been having this wonderful conversation before we came on the air today. So we're going, oh, we should be saving that for being on the air. So
exactly.
If our conversation ends up sounding kind of disjointed, that's because we were catching up and talking about a number of things that are going on for us. But that's one reason I love this show and I love talking to you, Bruce, and to anybody, is because it's kind of like, what's going on for you? What's happening in your particular classroom? I think that's what will always be interesting to our listening audience, because, of course, there's such synchronicity, and something going on for you is likely to be manifesting in my life as well and in their lives. And so I think it's okay to just say, what's going on in your part of the world and what's going on in your classroom that is really grabbing your attention? So I'd like to, introduce the idea that we're going to talk about thankfulness or gratitude. But, you know, it always comes back to the same thing when we're talking about A Course in Miracles, and that is really just learning to see our world as a classroom so that we can wake up to the truth of who we really are.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm so glad you chose Lesson 195 too, because that is got so much in it, and it to me, which is love is the way I walk in gratitude. To me, the whole non-dual quality of A Course in Miracles, when applied to anything specific, just brings such light and clarity to our minds when we realize that we can look at anything in a way that doesn't involve an either-or, we-they kind of thinking. And gratitude, I think, is a perfect example of that, because it's so often the case that we lapse into the ego's version of gratitude, which is a comparative gratitude, which is, oh, I'm thankful because this is happening in my life right now, the life as we think of it, or this is not happening in my life right now. And you know, the multitude of those things that we judge as to be either good or bad, and the battlefield of duality is so legion and so profoundly vast, it seems, that sometimes we forget that the only real decision is which teacher. If we can choose the gratitude for having chosen the teacher of kindness, the teacher of non-duality, the teacher of the shared interest that brings us home, that gratitude trumps any temporary gratitude for, oh, my circumstances just happen to be a little less hellish right now than they were before.
Right.
Or whatever, you know. So anyway, thank you for suggesting that.
Well, and you bring up a really good point, which is in The Course in Miracles, often I kind of reiterate this point, is that if you're reading it and you're not reading it with an open mind, you may not realize that the Course is really reinterpreting many of the words and concepts that we think we understand.
Absolutely.
So as usual, if the Course is talking about gratitude, it's really drawing a distinction between the gratitude of the ego and the gratitude of the right mind. And so, and in fact, I think it was in one of the question and answers on the FAA, you know, Foundation for A Course in Miracles site, in which somebody said, you know, how does gratitude figure into the course? And, you know, Ken or whoever wrote that particular answer comes right out and says, well, you know, actually, you have quite a bit of resistance to gratitude mm-hmm. because you do want to say, oh, I am thankful because, you know, things are working out for me, or right now my family is happy, or my job is good. We want to always jump to that. And that's the ego's version. But if you think about it, gratitude in the right mind is being grateful that you never left the love of God,
exactly.
that the gifts are always there, mm-hmm. and that you have a teacher who can show you that. But the resistance would be, once again, well, do you mean I have to let go of my individuality? Do I have to let go of my ego? Why would I want to do that? And so we have resistance to really being in the right mind and showing that kind of gratitude.
Yes, yes. And it's because we still think there's some little bit of mileage we can get out of, you know, the ego strategy for finding happiness in the world and, you know, knock yourself out. But I think ultimately, the more we go down all those roads, and here I said I wasn't going to mention that real alternative section bit of it. But because we had before we started the recording, you know, we were talking about in the last chapter, there's this section called The Real Alternative, you know, that is one of my favorites because it's so, you know, profoundly helpful, I think, that when we get to those moments where we don't feel grateful, when you know, even to the point of desperation or despair, I think that section admonishes us gently to say, you know, so maybe you have thought you've gone down all the roads that the world has offered and none of them has worked for you. And then you say, well, then what's the point? You know, and so I think the holidays, you know, it can be a time where people get depressed because they think, well, they build up, oh, this special event, I'm going to have this occasion, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever, birthdays are the same. You know, pick your favorite special, you know, temporal thing, gig. And it's all about, this is going to be better than something else. And forgetting there's nothing in the world that really makes us happy. It's just our decision in the mind to choose happiness. And that, as you point out just a moment ago, that's something that we can make at any time. We can, in any moment, choose that teacher of gratitude and of true gratitude, which is nothing to do with comparison. And the way that I find it so helpful to remember that the way to do that, to always keep falling back on, is the shared interest idea. To trust that inner kindness teacher to point us to, how can I share what I'm doing, whatever the specifics are, and you were talking about, you know, careers before we started the recording also, and how can we take a specific career that we're in or a specific activity that we're involved in and remember to use it as part of our classroom. And I think the way that we do that is, and we can feel very grateful that we have that inner teacher at all times, is to gently but firmly turn it back to, how can I use this to see that we're all the same? How can I use this to see that we're all in the same boat? We all have the same ego, which is 100% insane. We all have the same Holy Spirit, or I call it inner kindness teacher, but the Jesus of the course, that's that same inner teacher that is 100% sane, metaphorically, and the decision-making capacity and faculty that says, I can choose the teacher that is helpful and kind and fun and worthy of true unchanging gratitude in any moment. So.
Right. And, you know, as the course will often say, yeah, you know, maybe your life sucks, or, you know, you're not, I'm paraphrasing, you know, you're not finding the happiness because the people or the event, the celebration lets you down. Once again, you know, you're disappointed in whatever, you know, because it's never going to fill your need. I mean, that, you know, that comes out here too, that, you know, you're kind of just constantly wanting something more, you know, the black hole. But why don't you just, you know, isn't it great to be wrong? Isn't it great to just say, oh, I made a mistake. I forgot that this isn't truly who I am or what I'm about. And in fact, I was thinking, you know, I had mentioned to you, I'm reading the book From Futility to Happiness, Sisyphus as Every Man. And this is by Ken Wapnick. And it's one of those little books that they call The Practice of A Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the mythology of Sisyphus, who is the guy who, you know, is being punished by the gods. And he is rolling the boulder up the mountain. And every time he gets to the top, it rolls back down and he just has to start all over again. And it's a fascinating little book, by the way. But the one thing Ken says that I think applies here, that once again is one of those things that when I hear it, I go, oh, you know, I just kind of, it kind of takes my breath away, because he says we're tempted to think of Jesus as, you know, asking him to come in with us and push the boulder, literally. Right. He said, instead of being in our minds as we push the boulder, this is a huge difference.
Right.
And once again, it's like, it's not about asking Jesus or the universe or whoever to change the circumstances, but no matter what the circumstances, we can know that in our minds, we have the inner teacher.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, right, I forgot.
Yeah. I too share the appreciation for that work of the Sisyphus myth that Ken points out, which it also does mention the real alternative, I believe, the audio version of it that I've heard so many times. And it's basically a way to remember that like you're saying, you know, it's not about changing the boulder. It's not about, you know, making it lighter or making it go away or you know, getting someone else to push it for us. No, it's about realizing that no matter how big a boulder, it's no big deal when our identity is wrapped up in Sisyphus.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be the puppeteer and shift our awareness from the dream figure to the dreamer in order for us to really find any kind of lasting happiness. And that's what the Course is addressing. It's always about the mind. It's always about returning to the thoughtfulness and the mindfulness that suggests that we choose one of those two teachers. And it really boils down to the teacher of attack and judgment and everything that we give value to in the world and ascribe and anchor our identity to is an attack thought, even if it doesn't seem like it, including the gratitude for, oh, this catastrophe hasn't happened to me today, or you know, I have this advantage over someone else. You know, as long as there's a comparative nature to it, we're essentially kidding ourselves. We're basically saying that something that's different is making us happy, and that's just another one of those idols that's going to fall and smash eventually, and it may take a while, but sometimes if we catch it, you know, quickly, it's sort of like, you know, the kid on December 26 who's already broken his toy and is now frustrated with the box it came in too.
Yeah, right.
So, but you know, I think the point of, if like you say, that Sisyphus myth.
I know that's hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, in the audio, Ken says Sisyphuses. He says, how do you say Sisyphuses?
Well, I always have to think twice before I say it. You know, Sisyphus.
Right. But now I forgot. Now I derailed my own train of thought. But anyway, but yeah, it's such a wonderful audio, and it's such a good reminder to not take the dream so seriously and to be so identified with our stuff. Because I mean, one of the things that Ken and Gary, or Ken, Gary and Gary Renard's teachers have suggested is that, you know, if we can kind of look at, you know, what's going on in our worlds and you know, give thanks for the awareness that all of spirit is in every single person, then that takes our mind out of the comparative evaluative mode where we keep thinking that the specifics are going to do it for us in the space-time dream drama.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, you kind of brought up that idea, which I think gets touched upon in lesson 195, which is, how could you possibly be happy because somebody else is worse off than you?
Right.
You know, in fact, I think I've heard Ken say that in one of his audios, that idea of that phrase where we say, "There but for the grace of God go I."
Uh-huh.
You know, and he talks about, and I shouldn't blame him, but I know I've heard somebody talk about it, and I think it was him because I listened to him so much, that how unkind that is.
Yeah.
And how could you possibly really derive any kind of peace of mind or joy by going, okay, well, better that person than me,
mm-hmm.
or how, you know, or always doing those comparisons,
right.
You know, how could that possibly ever bring you joy? And it won't bring you joy, it won't bring you peace of mind or happiness in any form.
Right. Exactly. It's just an ego strategy to make the dream real in yet another way. And, you know, another road can be found.
Yeah.
Another path, another, you know, fake ladder that ego props up thinking, oh, we're going to get to where we need to go and by doing these specific things in the dream. And I think that's another place that kind of ties into, you know, early in the text, you know, where Jesus says, you know, if I were to, you know, move the boulder for you, I'm mixing metaphors here. If I was going to, you know, fix your dream problems, if I was going to go in and intervene with your issues, I would be violating the most fundamental law there is, the law of cause and effect. And that's such a truly inspiring message, because that means that he's reminding us that it really doesn't matter what seems to be happening to us. It's always about our choice in the mind as to how we either, you know, grab ego's interpretation and wallow in that, or we allow ourselves the inspiration of rising above the battlefield to where the real gratitude is, that sees that we're all in the same boat, and the boat that we think we're in, A, isn't real, and B, the boat we're really in is real, and that has absolutely no no suffering and no pain and no you know, grief or grievances involved in it, because where we truly exist, but we've blocked out of our awareness, is a place of all-inclusive oneness that is our true estate that we seem to just only get glimmers of from time to time, but that's our real nature that continues unabated, unthreatened, unshattered, eternally. And we have this mechanism of shared interest and trusting that inner kindness teacher to return to that. And you mentioned a TV show that I haven't seen, but you've seen, where they gave a metaphor of shattering the mirror in this town, and how each person had a piece, but we think that our little piece is the big deal. So we think that our individuality, that my interest, my needs, my whatever, me is it. And if we look honestly at what that's brought us, we have to say, well, that doesn't make me very happy.
That's right. Yeah. And what he's talking about, and I've mentioned it on another show, is there's a series called Once Upon a Time.
Yes,
and there is a witch, or I don't know, now I'm trying to even think who the character is. But anyway, she's very, very unhappy, and she wants everybody to be as unhappy as she is. So she casts a spell of shattered sight. And even the words shattered sight. And that's exactly what happens, is she breaks a mirror and causes all the thousands of pieces of the mirror to fall down on this town. And everybody then doesn't have a clear picture. They don't have the whole picture because they have shattered sight. And when I heard that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's so much like A Course in Miracles, or, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe even the writer is, you know, studies it or studies some other spiritual discipline. But just when we recognize that we're never seeing the whole picture, we're not seeing it clearly, especially if we're focusing on the world, if we're focusing on the symptoms, rather than kind of trying to, as you said, rise above the battlefield.
Right. And it has nothing to do with behavior or the level of form, you know, doing the things that we think we need to do. You know, in my case, it's been, you know, numerous trips to a hospital where my mother's been and just brought back from last night, you know, after, you know, three extended episodes there, and you know, sorting through her meds. And later this morning, I'm going to go back to the pharmacy because there are two doctors with the same name, and they gave her an extra prescription that really was meant for someone else, things like that. So, you know, so it doesn't mean that we say, oh, I don't need to deal with this because, you know, my true nature is, you know, beyond this. No, it just means that you can do the things that you would do otherwise, but do them without condemnation. So like when I go talk to the pharmacist, you know, rather than getting upset with them, if I'm mindful, I'll remember to say, hey, this is kind of funny, and well, not funny, but
yeah.
but amusing in a way that you know, the two doctors have the same name, and in this case they're two Dr. Wong, so my mom and I were joking about this, the wrong Wong. And anyway, so, but fortunately we stopped just short of her having that prescription by her bedside, and realized that there was a little humor there in realizing that, you know, we all make these mistakes, but we all have the corrective principle of not making a big deal about it and giving thanks for the capacity of the mind to choose the different teacher.
Right. And there again, it's not what happens. Everything that happens is neutral, but we have the option of not seeing it with judgment and anger and frustration.
Yes,
yeah. Well, exactly. And here's another good old funny one too that I was thinking about, because I just recently learned this, but apparently there is a turkey shortage. Did you know this? There's a turkey shortage because this summer there was a bird flu that kind of went through the Midwest and took out a lot of chickens and turkeys. And so they said that there had been an egg shortage. Now, I didn't even notice that. Oh. And as one of the people who I was reading some things on the internet about it, and they said, you know, so often these shortages are really nothing more than somewhat contrived.
Uh-huh.
You know, in fact, he was noting that at one point last year, there was a big scare because there was a shortage of rosé wine on the East Coast that was going to affect the Hamptons. And he said, I'm sorry, but like, really, this is something we're worried about, you know, for one Labor Day weekend, we might not have enough rosé wine. But anyway,
call out the National Guard. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. But what was funny is, I mean, there are less turkeys than there have been in the past because of the bird flu. And so when I was reading lesson 195, when it's talking about stuff, it says your brother is your enemy because you see him as the rival for your peace. And of course, I automatically said, we see him as the rival for our turkey.
Yeah, you know,
exactly. It does, you know, we can substitute anything, but that principle right there, you know, the ego script of me or you. So I better get to the store. I better put an order in because there's not enough turkeys and it's going to be me or you who gets the turkey this year. Now, the truth is I've heard there really are plenty of turkeys, but it's just, you know, we will always substitute something. We will find something to convince ourselves that it's me or you rather than going with the script of, you know, the inner kindness teacher, which would be, you know, all of us together or not at all.
Yes, yes. I'm laughing because I'm recalling when I was kind of between college years. I took a year off, I found myself working in a variety store that had, you know, kind of five and dime kind of stuff. And at the time, Johnny Carson was on the Tonight Show, and he made an offhand comment in jest because there were a few shortages of different things hitting the media, and he made an offhand comment in jest that there was a toilet paper shortage, and I remember that vividly because the next afternoon, and I was a stock clerk at the time, I looked in the back room and there was not a roll, let alone a box of toilet paper to be found, because everybody cleaned it out, panicking, thinking, oh, well, there's a shortage of toilet paper. I better stock up, you know. And so it's all about the mind. I mean, it's all about our perception and our interpretation of things that is based on a system of lack. And sometimes that actually, you know, has, you know, tragicomic results when we – In within the dream, anyway, that precipitates on the level of form, but it's all based on the idea that we could possibly be less than all of spirit, that we could possibly be individuals, be these shattered mirrors that couldn't possibly be truly grateful because there's always the rest of the universe that I don't have and I'm not. If we identify with this little partial fragment of the all that is that we really are.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that analogy of the mirror and that the spell of shattered sight, because, you know, so often in the course, we're reminded, just say to yourself, there must be another way. And if I could get into the habit of remembering whatever I think I'm seeing is only a part of the picture.
Right.
This is the spell of shattered sight. I don't have the whole picture. And if I could accept that, then I go, okay, then there must be another way to look at this. There must be some more information here. And so why am I reacting to partial sight?
Yes.
You know, and I love analogies. I love visuals. So if I could kind of hold on to that and just go, yeah, you've always got shattered sight, CA, you know, there must be something that you're missing. Why don't you open up to it? How different, you know, I would be and not hopping onto the pharmacist, you know, look at this mistake that was made or whatever, you know, and just jumping into that fear place of wanting to attack somebody else when I'm not happy with what's going on in my curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Actually, as you were saying that, I just thought of another pragmatic mnemonic device that I'm going to try to remember to use. That in addition to, you know, the typical bathroom or you know, household mirror, which is a good example because we just see a tiny reflection of what we are in that. But how about the glass that, that forms the front of our smartphones and our tablets and our laptops and our computers and our TVs? That there's a lot of little pieces of glass that just give us a partial picture of things. You know, what a great reminder if we can say, oh, I'm going to switch on this this mirroring device that's showing me just the tiniest infinitesimal fragment of reality, and probably a distorted one at that. And just remember to gently laugh at our getting upset or making big deals out of the things that come through those media to us.
Yeah. Well, and it's so much like the old, I don't know if it's myth or if it's a, what you call it, an allegory, but the blind men who are all touching the elephant.
Right.
And
right.
when they touch different sections of the elephant, they always have a different picture of what they think they're touching.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it's the same kind of thing. If we could just remember that we're not seeing the whole picture.
Right.
But, you know, another, and I'm taking this talk about mixing analogies, the but it's also interesting to me that at any point we could see our lives or we could see the course or anything in front of us as kind of a hologram as well. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that it really can truly show us the entire picture.
Right.
Because,
right.
you know, what I'm thinking is it's my tendency to go, okay, well, if I only have a piece of this mirror, I've got to run around and get all the other pieces.
Right.
You know, and this is going to take me forever to get all these pieces and to learn all of this and to figure this out. Whereas in the course, it really says, you know, just in an instant, your memory can be restored. In an instant,
yes. Yes.
you can join with love or you mm-hmm. can join with your right mind. So it's not about, once again, it's not about behavior. It's
yeah.
not about running around and getting all the mirror pieces back together.
Exactly.
It's, you know, we can also kind of pull to that other place and say, not only am I not seeing the whole picture, but I can see the whole picture, but I have to use eyes that are not of my body.
Right.
And I mean,
right.
that's so important. The body's eyes were never intended to show you the whole picture.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's so hard. That's so hard for me to want to get.
Oh, it's because we're such good actors, and we're such our minds are so powerful, and that's why, you know, again, that admonition in the first part of, you know, if I deprived you of you know, your ability to choose, I'd be deprived, you know, you're trying to tamper with the law of cause and effect, and that's the one freedom that we do have is to choose the teacher that is really, and I was thinking as you were saying that a moment ago of your shared interest in astrology and how we could take the individual signs of the zodiac that's so easy to identify with a specific thing rather than the Christ principle, if you will, or the integrating the center of the hub of the zodiac that says there is a perspective from which all are seen as the same, even though they appear to be different and have different aspects or archetypes. There are qualities or aspects that just with one click, if you will, to use a computer metaphor, brings us back to the center of the cyclone or the center of the hub that sees everything from a balanced perspective that sees all of it as the same thing rather than getting enamored with the specialness of a specific and identifying with what seems to be separate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's where the real gratitude comes from. That's where we truly can feel grateful when we realize that we all have access to that. There's no one that is deprived of that because we all have that mind. We all have that decision-making capacity to choose that awareness at any given moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in fact, in that the transition in perspective class or audio that you had turned me on to. And by the way, thank you so much. You know, Ken, at one point when he's taking questions from the audience, somebody says something and it basically is a comparison of Course in Miracles teachers. And, you know, this person's good and that person's not. And he says, why do you argue for differences?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do you get hooked up on all the differences? You know, that's not your point. And he goes, don't go there, you know? I mean,
Right.
and that's a simplified version of what he says, but I was so actually impressed when he did that because, once again, he wasn't getting all bent out of shape and going, yeah, that person, they're really distorting the course. They don't know what the course is about. He's just like, forget the course, forget the teacher. Why are you arguing for differences? Why are
Exactly.
you spending your time arguing for differences when you could be focusing on the unity?
It's kind of like when a pet has something and you tell them, drop it, drop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's how we let, if we can let go of our attachment to those things and to see where we're making those comparisons and just see that the differences aren't making us happy. That can be the moments where we start to generalize and say, oh yeah, anytime that I try to make a big deal out of differences or some kind of special, attachment to or repulsion from a specific circumstance or person or religion or political party or yada, yada, yada. I mean, you could just, the list goes on. It's endless. Any kind of thing that divides into specific categories can be turned around to become the tool and the mechanism by which we restore our mind to the shared interest idea. In fact, I was thinking about thanks again for bringing up lesson 195. The third paragraph from the end starts, walk then in gratitude the way of love, for hatred is forgotten when we lay comparisons aside. What more remains is obstacles to peace. The fear of God is now undone at last, and we forgive without comparing. Thus, we cannot choose to overlook some things and yet retain some other things still locked away as sins. In quotes. When your forgiveness is complete, you will have total gratitude, for you'll see that everything has earned the right to love by being loving, even as yourself. Now, obviously, on the level of form, our immediate, instinct is to say, well, wait a minute. No, not everything is love, because that's how we've trained our minds to interpret things. We've trained to see calls for love as attacks. And it certainly doesn't give us any advantage to ignore the attacks on the level of form, but to train our minds to see the calls for love behind them. And they can take countless forms. Anytime that we find ourselves comparing or having a better than or less than perspective about ourselves or anyone else, we're falling into that ego trap. But rather than beat ourselves up for that and judging our judgments, if we can just catch ourselves and say, oh, well, I have now the right and the authority and the opportunity as a decision-making mind to choose against that perspective, to choose against what I made up that hasn't served me by being really honest and saying, nope, that whole elaborate scheme that I made up to classify and categorize and make different and separate. It's needed for the world, but the world is a fabrication of my mind, and I can navigate through it and use all the things in it in a way that shares and expresses a kindness and a recognition that we're all in the same boat and we all can afford to help each other get home and be supportive.
Right. And in fact, I'm going to read in the paragraphs before the one that you just read. It says, uh-huh. And I'm not reading every sentence, but we thank our Father for one thing alone, that we are separate from no living thing and therefore one with Him. Mm-hmm. We give thanks for every living thing, for otherwise we offer thanks for nothing and we fail to recognize the gifts of God to us. Then let our brothers lean their tired heads against our shoulders as they rest a while. We offer thanks for them, for if we can direct them to the peace that we would find, the way is opening at last to us. An ancient door is swinging free again. A long-forgotten word re-echoes in our memory and gathers clarity as we are willing once again to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the words in A Course that I love.
Yeah.
Because can't you just see it? It's like all of a sudden the door is opening.
Yep.
Once we hear something that we hadn't heard before. And especially just that idea, let your brothers lean their tired heads against our shoulders.
Right.
Isn't that a wonderful image?
Yeah, it is. It really is very comforting and soothing, isn't it?
Yeah. And because once again, we're all on the path. We all are tired. We're tired of these baggage loads that we're carrying. You know, we're tired of that. And wouldn't it be nice if we could just like hit the off switch?
Yes, exactly. It just realize, it doesn't matter how much dust falls off that door as it swings open. Even if we have ignored it for, you know, days, years, millennia, it doesn't matter. I mean, because the light that comes through that is so healing. It dissolves and disintegrates, you know, however many days, years, millennia of dust and neglect denial, and reminds us that we have the choice to be at peace every single moment, and there's nothing in the world that can prevent us from choosing that thought system.
No. And, you know, I personally, I love that image anyway, and I tend to use it a lot, which is, I know I am so unaware of how much I'm carrying on my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes if you are in a meditation, a guided meditation, or possibly you're working with a masseuse or something like that, all of a sudden you realize how your shoulders are up against, you know, your ears. And they say, I mean, you know, I've had that experience with I used to take some private yoga, and she'd go, okay, now bring your shoulder down. And I'm like, it is down. She's like, no, it's not. And once she would show me, or she would touch it, or she would move my body in a certain position, I went, oh, that feels so much better. And I thought, I wish I had a picture of myself, because that's how it was almost. I could see all, you know, all the muscles are contracted and my shoulders are lifted up and they're right up next to my ears. I had no idea. And all of a sudden, it's like, can you just let that go? Can you just relax that muscle? Can you take that baggage that you're carrying and can you just set it down? You know, just set it down for even a few minutes, you know. And I forget how often I'm carrying the baggage of judgments or frustration or anger or disappointment. I don't think I am, but I am. Yeah. And when something happens that shows me I am, all of a sudden it's like, wow, right, that was heavy. What was I carrying that for?
Yeah. And not only the baggage, another metaphor that I think fits very nicely with that, that's also used in the course, is, you know, sometimes we haven't noticed that we've picked up the sword again.
Yes.
And you know, and the sword is just another form of baggage, right? It's just something, a grievance that we say, oh, I'm so upset with, you know, this talk show host or this politician or this government agency or, you know, yada, yada, you know, or family member or spouse or friend or coworker. Yeah. Pick any category or any specific, and they're all fair game for ego's strategy to keep us mindless, distracted, and obliviated to the decision-making faculty in our mind.
Yeah. And you're right. That sword is so heavy.
Oh, it's incredibly heavy.
I mean, that's why I kind of had that outburst when you said that. It's like, yes, that sword is so heavy.
Leave it in stone, huh?
And all of a sudden I realize I'm carrying it, you know? I'm wielding my sword, and it's like, oh my gosh, no wonder I'm tired.
Right, you right. Know? And it can be so subtle, too. It just can be a momentary, you know, a little sigh of, oh, I wish X person X would not think this way, you know, let alone say, you know, X, Y, or Z, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're ruffled, that is a classroom opportunity to say, oh, here's an aspect of myself that I can forgive and remember the warm feeling that you talked about, in the quote you just read, you know, the laying the head against the shoulder. But we're all kin. We're all ultimately the same being. But I mean, but the family and the friendship and the kinship is a great training wheel step toward that oneness, by recognizing that we're all in the same boat. We all have the same issues, the same opportunities to choose again and to see things differently. And let go of the sword, let go of the baggage and the heavy burden that our judgments and condemnations make. And the gratitude is based on differences is one of those swords and one of those bags. Mm-hmm. It's basically a mechanism by which ego says, oh, well, I want to keep you separate. I want to gonna, you know, you don't deserve to have that rest and that comfort of the metaphoric shoulder of your inner teacher. And you, so you just brush them off for a while longer, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So get off my shoulder, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But then they realize, well, but then I'm not happy. Because I think the more we practice seeing others' interests as our own, and not just on a level of form, but really in terms of, you know, the spirit that we all have, and whether it's a, you know, a nurse at a hospital, or a, you know, somebody in a traffic intersection, or somebody that we, you know, meet at a restaurant that's you know, on another table or serving us, or, you know, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter that we're all dealing with the same two thought systems and the same decision-making faculty that allows us to choose either the attack and judgment thought system, or the one that brings a smile to our faces that says, hey, yeah, we're all here together, and we can afford to laugh at the dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing I remember Ken said in the transition of perspective is, you know, you don't have to overanalyze where somebody's coming from.
Right.
You know, you can kind of, he goes, because there's only really one true response, and that's offering love, or trying to find the, you know, calling into your mind for a right-minded choice and then allowing that to flow through you. And he goes, you know, we want to get all caught up in, well, this person's coming from their ego, or this person is coming from fear. And he goes, you don't need to do that. You don't need to analyze it. You don't need to figure it out. You don't need to stop and kind of say to yourself, oh, this person's coming from ego, so I'm going to come from love. He goes, forget it, you know?
and actually what you just said reminded me that we could catch ourselves before we even get to the third word in that sentence, just by when we say this person, we've already, you know, used
them outside.
We use the language of differences, which, you know, our world is based on differences. So our language necessarily, by default anyway, reflects that. So we have to turn it around, as Byron Katie says. I'm reminded of in the fourth paragraph in Lesson 185. Okay, if I just read that, because I think it ties it perfectly.
Yeah.
It says, you do not offer your offer God your gratitude because your brother is more slave than you. Nor could you sanely be enraged if he seems freer.
Yeah.
And then this wonderful four-word sentence, love makes no comparisons.
Yeah.
And gratitude can only be sincere if it be joined to love. We offer thanks to God our Father that in us all things will find their freedom. It will never be that some are loosed while others still are bound. For who can bargain in the name of love? And that's our opportunity. Because a lot of times after, you know, you practice this principle a while, you say, oh, well, I forgive myself for this, that, and the other. But we always kind of hold a little reserve. You know, we always say, well, but this group people, or, you know, these, you know, quote unquote terrorists, or these organizations, or yada, you know, fill in the blanks of individuals or groups or whatever, aren't worthy of my gratitude or my love or whatever. And that's the whole, you know, the holdout that ego reserves to keep us in, you know, keep our classroom, away from our mind. And, but there's nothing there. There's nothing there. If when we look at it, it dissolves. It's like the dust on the door when it swings open. You realize there not only was no dust, there was no door, and we were never separate from each other and from that that quality of peace that is, you know, we use metaphors like the, you know, resting our tired heads against our shoulders kind of thing, you know, that feeling of camaraderie and you know, pulling together and the shared interest that the Course talks about in so many different ways. That,
mm-hmm.
But it all is about complete inclusion and forgiving ourselves on those moments when we're not quite ready for that. and knowing that it's happily inevitable. It's very fortunate, incredibly, and, you know, beyond comparison, fortunate that we can be aware of a oneness joined as one in its reflection of shared interests.
Yes. Well, and you know, I don't want to open up a bag of worms, but maybe I do. Pandora's box. Because also in lesson 195, I like this. It says, today we learn to think of gratitude in place of anger, malice, and revenge.
Right.
We have been given everything. If we refuse to recognize it, we are not entitled, therefore, to our bitterness.
Yes, yes.
And that's what I'm talking about, Pandora's box, because when you read something like that, we are not entitled to our bitterness. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation.
Right.
But I would point it out to people, you know, and I would also, you know, point out to people or recommend that, you know, pull out your workbook, the lessons, and look at lesson 195,
yes.
You know, especially during Thanksgiving, during this month of November. Read that and see what it says to you. But that, like I said, because that whole idea of we are not entitled to our bitterness is another discussion, but I'm just throwing it out there to be provocative.
Actually, a real quick comment on that is that if the we that Jesus is referring to in his wonderful book is not the we that we think we are,
mm-hmm.
and because that's true, we can afford to really be great, truly grateful, because that we, which is really oneself, has no reason for bitterness because it's above the battleground.
Right.
But the we that we think we are, oh yeah, big time. And we've got, you know, massive reinforcements in the world, people who will agree with us to say, oh yeah, you've got every right to, you know, file a lawsuit or be upset or make a fuss or, you know, call a Better Business Bureau or, you know, whatever, fill in the blanks, you know. And maybe those are the appropriate behaviors, but it's the internal mindset that's being addressed here, that the truth of what we are is not entitled to misery, which is a good thing. That's actually a really positive statement.
Well, that's right. But that kind of statement, because I think I'm reading it as CA,
right.
It definitely gets my attention. What do you mean, yeah. I'm not entitled to my bitterness?
Yeah.
And so as we then look further, read the context,
exactly.
We get to what you were just saying, which is, you know, if we are all whole and we are together, we don't have any reason to be bitter. You know, that's not our reality.
Right.
And in fact, I, you know, as I'm looking at the clock, I know we need to wrap up, but I would also point to one other statement in lesson 195, which is gratitude becomes the single thought we substitute for these insane perceptions.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and just to kind of, like I said, think about that through the month, through the holidays, through Thanksgiving. And also, in addition to lesson 195, I would point out, we've talked about this before, and once again, I thank Bruce because he's the one who keeps this in my mind, is on the Foundation for A Course in Miracles site, which is www.facim. There's actually a link. It's called Online Tools or Online Learning Aids. And if you click on that, one of the things that you'll find is several 1,000 question and answers. And you can take those one at a time, or you can search them. And if you search, you can find several on gratitude and thankfulness. So that would be another interesting thing to do during this month, is just go over there and read and see, you know, what some of the answers are, or some of the things people have thought about with gratitude. So Bruce, thank you, because like I said, you're the one, you refer to that a lot, and I forget about it from time to time, and it's such an incredible resource.
They're brilliant. I've been going through them sequentially after skipping around for years, and I'm in the 900s now, and they're all just fabulous. So I highly recommend those, and thanks for that reminder, yes.
Yeah, they really are, and like I said, I thank you, because I forget that they're there. You know, I mean, I'm always in search of the next great book. And, you know, you go to that website, there's all kinds of just free things that you can read and that you can, you know, just, you know, get in your head.
About very specific things.
Yes,
that we
yes.
think are the big deals.
Right, right. And it is helpful because they're very succinct answers.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when we're saying, well, what does it mean by this? Or what is the purpose of the course? Or what about that? You can actually go look it up in the index and see if they've got a question and answer for your particular question.
You might also want to mention their academy class, which is actually happening as we speak this week, and they're all wonderful. I've been watching the streaming ones, and I know you are too. And in addition to being able to attend in person, which is a great option for those who have that available, but all of their work is just wonderful. And also the FIP site, the Foundation for Inner Peace site, has tremendous resources as well. So lots of places to draw some inspiration from and to further the gratitude that we've been talking about.
Right. And you know what? Thanks for bringing that up too, because I have been streaming that class this past week. And I was really delighted actually, because, you know, it was $100. I mean, you know, that seems amazing for a 3-day class.
Yes.
I mean, $100 for a 3-day class. And even though I was not able to sit through every hour of it, they do make it available for like 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. It's all videoed. So not only can you sit in your own home or your office or whatever and stream it live from Temecula, California, after the fact, if you've missed any of the sessions, you can go back and watch those videos. And like I said, for $100. I mean, when I went to sign up for this particular one, I really thought it was going to be like $250 or $300. That's what I assumed, $100 a day. And I couldn't believe that it was $100.
What a deal, huh?
Oh, I mean, you know,
truly,
I almost want to contact them and say, what are you thinking?
Really.
But no, I really want to tell people that. What an incredible resource be able to literally take a class from people who have been steeped and experienced this and studied it for so many years, who were right there with Ken Wapnick.
Yes.
This is a foundation that he and his wife, I guess, started. And, you know, what an incredible resource to be able to take that class live. And if you're streaming, you can also send them questions that they will address. And so it's been a great experience. So I also say thank you to you, Bruce, and to Susan Dugan, because I've heard you guys both talk about that. And I was kind of resistant going, oh, I don't know if I want to sit in front of my computer and take a class. And it just ended up being such a great experience.
They're wonderful. And along the same lines, if I can put in a little plug also for the Miracle Share virtual conference, which on a level of form ended a couple of weeks ago. But I was grateful to be one of the participants, both this one and the previous one. There's 2 years now. And on ACIM blog, I have a link to that. And if you want to attend that virtual conference, it's still on the servers. So you can watch the 24+ videos and hear the corresponding audio commentary, Q&A, phone-ins, for as long as you like.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. And do you have any other announcements before we end the show today?
Oh, I think we've made plenty. Just like you say, there's so much wonderful material online. You mentioned Susan's website. That's always a great resource, Forays in Forgiveness. I've got one ACIM blog, and I also post a lot of stuff on Facebook and on the ACIM blog pages there and Twitter and that kind of thing. But just a lot of stuff online, and I think it's a great metaphor, just like, you know, we talked about the split mirror on the TV show. We can use those little bits of technology and the seeming different things to remind us to bring it all back together and bring it back to oneness. So.
Right. Great. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, and I hope that you have a great Thanksgiving.
Likewise.
And in fact, because this show, I loved what all the references to gratitude. Maybe we'll play this the Friday after Thanksgiving as well.
There you go.
So some of you may be listening to this the day after Thanksgiving, and I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I hope that, you know, this really does become a month where we focus on gratitude. So thank you so much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks also to all the listeners today and to everybody in the chat room who's participating that way. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. You can find Bruce at www.acimblog.com. And of course, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which is where we were discussing that you can find lots of resources, that is www.facim.org. Throughout the holidays, you'll be able to find me on 12listen.com. So if you want to talk, you want an astrology reading, maybe you just want to check in, maybe you just want to have a chat, you'll find me on 12listen.com. If you don't see me, remember that you can always schedule a call, which means you can basically come up with a time that's good for you, send me a quick note, and find out whether or not I'm available as well. And I will try to accommodate your request as much as possible. You have about 5 minutes before our next live programming, The Through Line with Christine Dumarier, coming up next on Fabulous Fridays on 1-2 Radio. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about gratitude.